You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So, a question for you. Do you know what this is? And I want a specific answer. If it's a vague, general answer, it's not going to count. But I want to know who the real, well, cool people are. Okay. No. More. Anybody other ideas? That is not a good enough answer, daughter. All right. Okay. This is Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. More specific, this is the. It was in the sixth. Yes, it was. This is not to be confused with the original lightsaber that he got. This is his new one that he got after he lost it, along with some other things in the process. And so anyway, if you don't know anything about Star Wars, welcome to war the world. Anyway, but this is Luke's second lightsaber, and it doesn't really matter in terms of the scheme of things, but it's actually a universal remote control, which is kind of cool. But I wanted to bring this up here for no particular reason whatsoever, except to set up this clip that I want to show you that comes from Episode 4, Star Wars Episode 4, which, in terms of release date, is the first Star Wars movie released in 1977. In terms of chronology, let's see, at this point, it would be the 5th movie in the chronology, even though it was the first movie that came out, and just deal with it. But in this particular scene, you've got a young, young guy, he's not a Jedi yet, a young guy named Luke Skywalker is given his father's lightsaber. It is not this lightsaber. And he is being taught to train with it. And there's a little training droid that is shooting, and he has to deflect it. And he is also being taught by this guy named Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is teaching him the ways of the Force. And you'll understand a little bit more of what the Force is. But I want you to watch this clip and look at how, and we'll talk about it, what's going on here as he is learning to train on his lightsaber.
Remember, a Jedi can feel the Force flowing through him.
You mean it controls your actions?
Partially, but it also obeys your commands.
Pokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster, you said.
You don't believe in the Force, do you?
Kid, I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff, but I've never seen anything to make me believe there's one all-powerful Force controlling everything. There's no mystical energy field controls my destiny. It's all a lot of simple tricks and nonsense.
I suggest you try it again, Luke. This time, let go your conscious self and act on instinct.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. Stretch out with your feelings. You see? You can do it.
So in that scene, obviously, Luke is learning to train with his lightsaber, and there's this line that I want to catch on and talk about a couple of things going on there. So, first of all, he's learning to deflect and everything, and he does it with his, you know, visually he can see it. And then Obi-Wan gives him the helmet, and Luke kind of says, "Man, when the blast field down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight then?" And I want to talk about Obi's response there, because Obi-Wan's response is, don't trust your eyes, because your eyes can deceive you. And this morning, as we continue this series on less of me and looking at how we need to be less, and we'll talk about what that means in a moment in case you forgot what humility means. But I want to look at this verse as kind of the setup for what we're going to be talking about this morning. And it comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. And Paul writes this to the church in Corinth. He says, "For we live by faith, not by sight." And the reality is, as we break this down, as we go further into this, our sight as human beings gets in the way of our faith. And Paul is reminding this church, he says, look, we're not here to live based on what we can see and what we can grasp and what we can understand and what we can work out. We are to live our lives based on faith, based on trust. And so the point that I want to look at this week as we talk about this passage in a bit is that less of me means more trusting God's plan. Less of me means more trusting God's plan. When we put ourselves aside, then we truly begin to trust what God is doing. Because understand that, and we've been doing these, this is, the sixth week of this series, we've been looking at these kind of paradoxes. Less of me means more of this. And we talk about why we need to be humble, and it leads to this. But the opposite is also true. The less that we trust God's plan, the more it becomes about us. And the more it becomes about us, the less that we trust God's plan. Because we think that it's about our sight, what we can see, perceive, feel, touch, and understand, that is the way that we are supposed to lead. So we're looking at this idea of humility. And again, we've talked about this definition a million times, or maybe six. This will be the sixth time here. But humility is this. It is the quality or condition of being humble, a modest opinion or estimate of one's importance, rank, etc. And in this series, we've been looking at the life of John the Baptist and how everything that he has been doing, he has done, he has said, everything that has happened leading up into his birth at the very first week as we talked about it, has to do with this idea of humility, of less of me. That it's not about John, and it's not about his understanding, it's not about his success, it's not about his comfort, it's not about his any of these things. It's not his plan. We've looked at all these different things over the last few weeks. And I want to look at this idea as we continue in Matthew chapter 11. The lights are going to turn off. You have a paper Bible, you can go there. If you have YouVersion, just tap on Matthew and tap on 11. We'll be there in New Testament. YouVersion is a great tool to be able to read the Bible, and there's tons of versions and translations in there. We're using the NIRV today, the New International Revised Version. This is what it says in Matthew 11, verse 2. Now, last week, we looked at how John was talking about sacrificing his success, and he said, he must increase and I must decrease. Jesus must become greater and greater, because everybody was leaving John and going to Jesus. And John said, that's cool. That's the way it's supposed to be. He is supposed to be better, greater, and I am supposed to be less. He is supposed to be increased more and more, and I'm supposed to become less and less. And there was this little parenthetical statement that we looked at last week, and we didn't look at it, we just ignored it and just said spoiler. But it said last week, now this was before John was in prison. So if you were listening last week and you're like, what's that all about? Well, here we are. We are now with John in prison. And it says here in verse 2, John was in prison. So, John the Baptist is now in prison. When he heard what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to him. They asked Jesus, "Are you the one who was supposed to come, or should we look for someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back to John. Report to him what you hear and see. Blind people receive sight. Disabled people walk. Those who have skin diseases are healed. Deaf people hear. Those who are dead are raised to life, and the good news is preached to those who are poor. Blessed are those who do not give up their faith because of me." Now, I need you to understand what's going on here. John is in prison. Now, last week, his disciples, John's followers, came to him and said, "John, everybody's leaving you and going to Jesus." And John has been saying from the beginning, even before he was born, that his purpose was to pave the way, was to set the stage for the Messiah, the one that the Jewish people have been waiting for to make things right. And whether we realize it or not, the one we are hoping for, have been waiting for to make things right. He's making it right for everyone. And John says, my job is to get things ready for him. And even in the Old Testament, there were a bunch of prophecies, a bunch of declarations about this coming one. This Messiah is the Jewish word. Christ, Christos, is the Greek word for the anointed one, the one that was going to make it right, the rescuer. And the Old Testament had some of these prophecies, and it said about how this guy is going to come and set the stage. And once this forerunner, once this guy who comes from the wilderness, who lives on locusts and honey, once he is here, it means that the Messiah is finally coming. And again, it's something like, I don't know, like for you guys, for in terms of understanding it today, my vacation is coming up in July. And I love looking forward to vacation. And specifically, we have a week where we go to Florida. We rent this beach house, and my whole family, all six of us, say whole, that's a lot of us. So all six of us go, we rent this beach house, and we have a great time. We love it. And it's so much fun. It's time to be together. I love the beach. I love summer. I have spent, like, we've had 2 days of warmth, and I've probably spent pushing 8 hours or more in our pool, floating, because that's what pastors need to do. Actually, I do think, actually, during that time, too. But I love the warmth, and we are so excited because our trip to Florida is coming up. We booked this back in January for the deposit, and then we paid more of it, I don't know, sometime later. And so we have been looking for it. It's coming, and we're counting, like, okay, just a few more weeks, just a few more, you know, first of a few more months, a few more weeks. And we're excited about it because it's going to be kind of a neat thing. It's going to be fun for us to get away and enjoy that time together. That is similar, that experience that we have when we are looking forward to vacation or to our wedding date or to, you know, to that big party we're going to have or that surprise or whatever. That anticipation, I want you to understand, is what the Jewish people were experiencing, waiting for this coming Messiah. And so John, that was his goal, was to set everything up. Jesus is going to be this Messiah. He's coming, and John baptizes Jesus. And John even says, Jesus, like, whoa, you're the Messiah, you're the Christ, I don't even deserve to baptize you, and said, no, this is going to set things up. This is going to start things. This is going to make this, everything kind of begins at that moment. And so he had all this stuff, John's life, saying, this is what I'm about, John doing all these things, John telling everyone, prepare the way, the one is coming. Everything that we've been looking at for the past 5 weeks have been about John's job is to set things up for Jesus. It's about him, it's about him, it's about him. Problem. John's in prison. He didn't expect it to be this way. He didn't expect things to turn out this way because, again, one of the things in the Old Testament is they kept the imagery there is about this one that's going to conquer and this one that's going to be victorious and strong and powerful. And the Jewish people in this time were under Roman captivity, not captivity, but Roman control. And they expected that the Messiah was going to come and, like, you know, riding on his horse, yeehaw, coming in like John Wayne, shooting his guns, and you know, doing that. Or like Adam West, who passed away yesterday. He was Batman. Anyway, as Batman coming in, you know, they expected someone to rescue them. And what they missed is that the rescue wasn't as physical as they expected it. It was actually deeper and more spiritual rescue from sin. And ultimately, Jesus will conquer all of that. But they were expecting that to happen now. And so John's in prison going, this isn't what I expected. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. So he says to his disciples, look, guys, can you go to Jesus and just check? Just make sure that everything that I've been doing here hasn't been a waste. Like, did I get this wrong? Is this the way it's supposed to be? And so that's what's going on here. And this week in your prime groups, you're going to have a chance to really chew on some of these things. We're looking at a number of things even deeper and further in because there's so much packed into what's going on here. But understand, that's kind of the setting here. John's in prison, and John would have thought, well, wait a second. If Jesus is on the scene, I'm not going to be in prison. I'm going to be in control. I'm riding my horse behind him. You know, we're coming in. I'm climbing the bat rope behind him. You know, like, because he's the one that's going to fix everything. And so he says to his disciples, can you go ask Jesus and make sure? And so I want to talk about this idea of living by faith and not by sight. Because in John's eyes, his sight is going, whoa, wait a second. I'm in prison. This is not the way I expected. So living by faith, not by sight. Next slide, please. Living by faith, not by sight. Now, I want to talk about this and look at kind of contrasting sight, which is physical, which is visceral, which is tangible, versus faith, which isn't. Now, I want to ask just kind of a quick question, and you don't have to get involved in this survey if you don't want to. I don't want to embarrass you, make you feel uncomfortable. But if you could raise your hand if the following is true of you. You're human. Because we all are. And we all are used to, you know, our life is built in tangible human terms. We want to live human. We want to understand. We want to get it. And if we are going to be following Jesus the way we are supposed to be following Jesus, we're not going to be able to see, feel, and touch everything and understand everything that way. And that's where we find John here. And so I want to compare and contrast the living by faith and living by sight. So in John's situation, as we look at this passage, sight sees our plan. That's what sight says. We have our plans. Here's what we're going to do. But faith trusts God's plan. And so for John, he's in prison. He's going, whoa, my plan wasn't looking like this. Prison was definitely not part of it. Now, we'll talk next week about how he even got there. And it wasn't his fault. It was doing, and even more so, he was doing the right thing. That's how he ended up in prison, for obeying God. And so he's going, well, this is not what I expected, because I expected that the Messiah was going to come in and this was going to be it, and we were going to win. It was going to be victory and down with the Romans, and we're in control, and Jesus is on the throne, and the Messiah, it's all good. And he's going, whoa, wait a second. And so that's what he's doing here in verses 2 to 3, is that he's going and asking his disciples and saying, are you truly the Christ? And so in 2 to 3, he says, when he heard what Christ was doing, so John is knowing what's going on. In verse 2, John knows what's going on. And next slide, please. And he says, when he heard what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to him. So he knows what's going on. He sees that Jesus is doing some stuff. And he says, are you the one? Because this isn't exactly what I expected. This isn't exactly the way we wanted it to turn out. Or should we look for someone else? Like, Jesus, I'm in prison. Jesus, you're a swell guy. And I've been working hard to kind of set the stage for the Messiah. But if you're not him, can you let me know, please? Because I don't. Wow, has this been worth it? Is this worth it? And so that's what's going on here in the first part of this verse, is that he's looking at his plan and missing that God has a bigger plan, and not just saying, God, you know, what's going on here? And I think that this is something that we do. We say, okay, this is what I wanted. This is how I expected it to turn out. This is the way I have set up and scheduled this thing to happen. And now it's not. Because as I look at it, it isn't where I want it to be. And that's living by sight. But living by faith says, okay, God, I'm going to trust you. So that's the first part of this, is that sight sees our plan, but faith trusts God's plan. The second thing is that sight sees our circumstances, where faith trusts God's faithfulness. And here's the big clincher about this passage. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because, they both go out? Yeah, they do. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because what's going on here is that we expect Jesus to respond and say, yes, I am. Huzzah! Miracler! And now you're free. And the jail breaks open, and John runs out, and suddenly a Pegasus horse rides, and he flies off into the sunset, you know, because that's what happens. That's kind of what we expect, and that's when we look at the Bible, too. I mean, there's a lot of stories of these miraculous, like, wow, God's going to come through, and yes, and that's what it's been all about. But it doesn't happen that way. Jesus' response almost seems, from our perspective as modern-day, you know, Americans, like, this seems mean. Jesus, you're just mean. Why? Because in John's situation, he's looking at his circumstances, expecting Jesus to say, to come back and be like, oh, John, sorry, man, I forgot about you there. Huzzah! You are free. Miracler! That's what John was expecting. But instead, this was Jesus' response in verses 4 to 5. And again, we need to understand, Jesus replied to them, go back to John. Report to him what you hear and see. Okay. Hey, Jesus, we're waiting for it. He says, blind people receive sight. Disabled people walk. Those who have skin diseases are healed. Deaf people hear. Those who are dead are raised to life, which is pretty impressive. And the good news is preached to those who are poor. And rub the gate and it opens. Ray, stomp 3 times and turn around. Where's the release? Jesus, when's John going to get out? And his answer had nothing to do with that. His answer was, let John know what you see and hear. Now, here's where we need to understand something that you probably missed if you just look at this passage as is. You are not, I mean, you might not, you probably aren't Jewish. You might be. If you are a Jewish person in Jesus' time, they knew their Old Testament, they knew the Messiah, they knew the scriptures tying to it. And so when John says, Jesus, are you the one? Jesus' response is, look, let's look at my job description. Let's look at what is going on right now and report to him what you see. He says, blind people receive sight, stable people walk, those who have skin disease are healed, deaf people hear, those who are dead are raised to life, and the good news is preached to the poor. These are passages from Isaiah that were referring to the coming Messiah. And so here in Isaiah chapter 35, it's talking about the coming Messiah. It says, with this news, strengthen those who have tired knees and encourage those who have weak, tired hands and encourage those who have weak knees. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong and do not fear, for your God is coming to destroy your enemies. He is coming to save you. So this is setting it up. And when he comes, he will open the eyes of the blind and unplug the ears of the deaf. The lame will leap like a deer, and those who cannot speak will sing for joy. Springs will gush forth in the wilderness, and streams will water the wasteland. So this is a quote. Jesus is quoting, essentially saying, look, remember all these things, John? Remember John's disciples? These things that are referring to the coming Messiah? Tell them what you're seeing, because all these things are happening through me. And then another passage in Isaiah, in Isaiah 61, says, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted. This is referring to the coming Messiah, and to proclaim that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. And so here you've got another passage where Jesus is basically saying, John's followers, guys, look, it's all happening. This is for real. I am doing these things that the Messiah is doing. I am the Messiah. And the interesting thing about where he talks about good news being preached to the poor, the word poor doesn't mean they don't have as much money. That word is used that way, certainly. That's what the word is used. It actually is a deeper kind of a spiritual poverty. It's people that are poor and helpless. The focus is on the helpless side. And so Jesus is saying, you know, I'm not just going like, hey, you don't look like you have a lot of money. Let me tell you about Jesus. Or about myself, since he is Jesus. No, it's not this poor like that. It's to people that are helpless. And we all of people are helpless on our own, apart from a Savior. And so Jesus is saying to John, look, he's not even answering John's question about being released. What he's saying is that everything that you've been doing has been worth it. Everything that you have been setting up because you're wondering if I'm the Messiah, John, look at it. Look at the description. Am I doing all these things? Yes. So I am that person. I am faithful. I am coming through in all of these situations. And so when it comes to John's circumstances, you know, he's looking, kind of expecting, and his disciples are expecting, like, okay, Jesus is going to release him now. And Jesus just talks about his faithfulness. So sight sees our circumstances, but faith trusts God's faithfulness. And we need to be content with that. We need to be content with knowing that God is faithful. And God has never ceased to be faithful. There is no point in your personal history, in your lifetime, ever, where God was not, has not, will not be completely faithful. And so in John's circumstances, John wants a rescue. John wants to be kind of brought out. His disciples want to be fixed. And Jesus says, no, that's not the issue here. The issue is I am faithful. And I truly believe that John was content with that answer. I think John was going, okay, then I am cool. Because it's not about me. It's not about now. I am cool being here. I mean, he's not happy about it. But he's like, then it's worth it. As long as you are the Messiah, then I'm down with that, because that is what it's all about. It's all about making you greater. And if you are truly the one, then my circumstances are irrelevant. And we have to. This is hard. But we have to come to grips with that. Are we able to say, even if there is no rescue, God is still faithful? Even if He doesn't work it out and provide that job that I want, or resolve that situation the way that I hope. Whatever the issue is, are we okay just trusting that God is faithful? Because that's what Jesus' response was to John here. That he says, it's not about release. It's about who I am. And so then in the last part here is that sight sees God's failure. And this kind of ties in what I was just saying. But faith trusts for eternity. See, in our perspective, and again, I don't feel that this was a bad answer for John. I think John was happy with this answer because he just wanted to make sure. He expected this coming conqueror. He expected this victorious riding on a horse kind of thing. And Jesus said, no, I'm not doing that. But remember all these things about the Messiah. I'm doing those things. Okay. Okay, cool. But a lot of times we will look and we look at John's circumstances. And I had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago with Steph. You know, like, where's the silver lining? Where's the big rescue? Where's the, well, because he was in prison, 3 million people that were working in that prison came to Jesus. There isn't one. And for us, we look at those kind of things, those circumstances, and say, God, you failed. God, why didn't you come through? God, don't you care about me? God, don't you know what's going on in my life? God, don't you love me? God, why did you drop the ball on this? And we look, and our sight says, here's where I am. Here's the prison that I'm in. Here's the situation that I'm dealing with. And I'm blaming God. It's your fault. Where John looked at this situation and understand, you know what? Now is just a drop. It's not about now. It's about eternity. It's not about my prison. It's not about my situation. It's about what is God doing for eternity, and what am I? What is He doing in my life for eternity? And that's what we see in verse 6. And this is a phrase in this verse that we will miss if we're not careful here. But Jesus says, blessed are those that do not give up their faith because of me. Now, we've talked about this before. I think during the Christianophobia series, we talked about what does God's blessing mean? We talk about we're blessed because we have money. We're blessed because we have a good family. We're blessed. Like, yes-ish. I mean, at the same time, our money could be a curse. All these things that we consider blessings. We have a house. We have a big house. Nice house. Nice car. I mean, we call those blessings. But the word blessed in the Bible, the New Testament word, is the word makarios. And it means, and I don't want to mess it up here by saying it, it's blessed, blissful, and it means that God is present and active in your life. And so, and when you read the Beatitudes, which are in Matthew chapter 5, and Jesus says, blessed is the person, you know, that the meek will inherit the earth. He kind of goes through all these different things about the blessed, the blessed, the blessed. And all of those things are not because, wow, you're going to be happy. You're going to have more stuff. It says you are blessed because God is at work in your life. And that is blessing. And so when Jesus says, look, John, it's kind of his end summary to his disciples, as John's disciples, as they go back to him. He says, look, blessed are those who do not give up their faith because of me. And here's the translation. I know what I said is hard, but stay strong because I'm active in your life. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Blessed are those who do not give up their faith because of me. The word means to stumble, to mean trip, scandalizo, to cause someone to fall. It literally means like, you know, and this happened a couple weeks ago with some of my children, perhaps, where someone thought, hey, it'd be funny to stick my foot out and trip them. That's this word. Blessed are those who do not give up their faith, who are not tripped because of me. Jesus is saying, what I'm saying is hard. I understand. But understand also that Jesus, that I'm at work, that God is at work. I am not done. And so if you can stay strong, even through the hard times, you will be blessed. You'll be able to recognize that God is truly at work in your life. And that's what's going on here. Jesus says, look, John, I know your circumstance isn't what you want. But it's not about your circumstance. It's about my faithfulness, and it's about eternity here. Because I'm working something that's going to matter way beyond that. And John, I think, I truly believe, because there's nothing that would indicate otherwise anywhere in the Bible, I think John was going, yes, absolutely. And that is why later in the book of Acts, you have Stephen, who gets stoned to death. And he goes, I see heaven. I look up and I see heaven, and I'm cool with that because I'm willing to die for Jesus. That's why throughout history you have people willing to give up their lives for Jesus, which is a little spoiler for next week, but willing to give up everything because they realize that now isn't what it's all about. It's about eternity. And I know Justin taught this. I did a 1.2. We stole it from Francis Chan. We used to have this rope, and right now I think it's tying up some of the wires somewhere in the building. But it was this clothesline, and the clothesline went all the way out of the door and way beyond there. And at the very end of it, we had dipped in red, a little red spot. And that line represented eternity. And the red spot, that little dot on the very end, represents now. Like, compared to forever, now is nothing. And so our job is, like, why don't we focus on that instead of on this? And that's where John was. John was able to say, yes, I get it. Blessed is the one. God is at work in my life because I'm going to stay strong, even though this isn't the answer that I want. Even though this answer doesn't fix my circumstances, because the picture is bigger. Because he says, I can trust that God is faithful. I can trust that God is good. I can trust that God's plan is better than my plan. And so that's the situation you find yourself, you see here in John's life, that he is living by faith, not by sight. And so you've got these things. Sight sees our plan, faith trusts God's plan. Sight sees our circumstance, but faith trusts God's faithfulness. And sight sees God's failure, but faith trusts for eternity. I'm not saying this is easy. I am not. I'm saying this is hard, and I deal with these hard things daily myself. Like, we struggle with this. We want the answers now. We want the result now. We want the fix to happen. And sometimes the fix will never happen because it's not about now. It's about eternity. And the thing that we want, we think, okay, God, fix this and I'll be happy. Well, maybe sometimes God withholds things because he wants to make us happy. Sometimes we don't get what we want because God's got something better for us. And we need to be content in God's faithfulness. And we're not living by sight what we can see and feel and hear and touch and experience, but to say, I'm going to live by faith and trust that God knows what's going on. And when we do that, it becomes less of me. It's not about me. It's not about what I want. It's not about my plan. It's about what God wants. So it's less of me means more trusting God's plan. And here's the thing about this too. God's plan, it's what that blessed word means, makarios. God's plan is for our best. God knows better than we do. Well, God doesn't know better than I do. Yes, he does. That's why we call him God. And he is a loving God. He is a faithful God. And Jesus coming to this earth during John's lifetime wasn't so that he could ride in on a horse and say, yeah, I'm going to preach to the people that don't have much money. It was so that he could make this sin problem right. That's why Jesus came. And his plan was to fix that, to die on the cross for us, because he loves us. And so we need to understand that. And maybe we do understand that. I don't know. I just know that this is such a struggle to say, God, you've got a bigger picture. Can I trust your bigger picture? Can we step back and say, it's not about me and what I want, but it's about what you want? So, let's talk about that a little bit. I love how Luke whines. Luke whines a lot in the Star Wars movies. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do in 7 or in 8 here. In 7, he didn't really say anything. Spoiler! But he has a lot of like, oh, what? And in this particular scene, he says, but with the blast shield down, I can't see anything. How am I supposed to fight? And I think a lot of times we do the same thing to God. But God, I can't see what you're doing, so how am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to trust you? Show me, prove it to me, God. You owe me. Come on. And I think God is saying, live by faith, not by sight. You're not going to always see the answers. And so I want to share a few things when it comes to seeing with the blast shield down. That when it comes to the spots where we are in life, we are in prison, we are in a spot where we can't see what's going on, we don't know what's next, we can trust God. And in all these things, these are unknowns, we can trust God with the unknowns. And Everything is an unknown. Let's be real here. I mean, we think we've got it under control. We think we've got the seatbelt that will protect us. And I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Ain't no seatbelt going to protect you if you drive over a cliff. It's not. Nothing's going to protect you if you suddenly have a stroke. Your money isn't going to protect you if you know, you lose your job. Or you have a big expense. Your house burns down. I mean, there's all these things that we think, well, we've got it controlled. We've got it under control. We've got it figured out. And we've got it safe. And we don't. And everything is unknown. And we can trust God with the unknown. There we go. We can trust God with the unknowns. And I want to look at this passage in Proverbs. And it's going to kind of set up, and you'll have some chance to really chew on this in prime groups this week. But I want to use this to set up what we're looking at here with these different areas. And in Proverbs 3, verses 5 to 7, Solomon wrote Proverbs, says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart." And you'll have a chance to discuss this again in prime groups, so I don't want to steal too much of the thunder right now. But with all of your heart, not the part where you see and understand. It's easy to trust when we understand it. It's easy to trust when we know we're going to be all right. We were just talking about with my kids yesterday about the difference between a roller coaster and a water slide. And I think one of my girls was saying how they like a roller coaster a little bit better because then you're at least strapped in, you've got a harness, and you're safe, where a water slide, you're just kind of, you know, at the whims of everything. And there needs to be an element of trust when we feel safe. And when we don't, it's got to be all times. Not when we can see the harness, not when we know the answers, but when we don't. He says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. And then he essentially says the same thing that Paul says. Do not look with your eyes. Don't live by sight, live by faith. He says, do not depend on your own understanding. Don't think we've got it figured out. We're living in an era, where are we? Let's say generous. Maybe we're 4,000 years since the creation of human beings. Well, at least since the beginning of Abraham. Let's say that. So 4,000 years of human history. We can debate that later if you want. I don't care. But in the last 4,000 years, we have made a lot of progress. In the last 400 years, we've made a lot of progress. In the last 40 years, there have been a lot of progress in technology and changes and things. And in all of that, we have learned. We have kind of gained this like, hey, we've got it. We've got it figured out. Oh, is that the problem? Let me fix it. Is this the issue? All right. You have this sickness? Here's your cure. And we've got all these things. I mean, right now, Relay for Life is going on. That's the one area. Like, we don't have a cure for cancer. All right, let's work on that. But other things in life, we've kind of got this. We've got it figured out. And I think that has affected us as we live our lives today in 2017 America, where we go, here's a situation. I don't get it, so I think here's the solution. I know how to work it out. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to resolve it. And Solomon says, do not. He doesn't say kind of. Depend on your own understanding. He doesn't say depend on your own understanding when the situations merit it. It doesn't say depend on your understanding when your understanding makes more sense than trusting God. He says, do not depend on your own understanding. Do not live by sight. Seek His will in all you do. And He will show you which path to take. And so Solomon says, look, when it comes to the unknown, when it comes to the hurt, when it comes to the circumstance we don't get, what's going on? He says, look, step back and trust God with everything. Don't even allow what about this? What about that? Don't go, oh, I read in this blog that I should, nah. My friend said, it's okay, hon. No. Don't depend on your understanding. Seek Him in everything, and He will show you which path to take. I hope you see the extreme words here, the intense words here. All, do not, all, He will show you. And I'm not saying this is easy, but I'm just telling you that when it comes to the unknown, God has it. We just need to be willing to trust Him for it. And in order to do that, when it comes to our own understanding, when it comes to living by sight, we have to be less of me. We have to put those things aside and trust Him. So, we can trust God with the unknown. And I want to share a few things that we can trust God with the unknowns in. The first thing is that we can trust God in the unexpected. In the unexpected, in our fear. In these moments, it's suddenly, whoa, where'd that come from? I didn't know that was going to happen. And we have these moments where suddenly, out of the blue, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but you know, if someone has a sickness, we know. If someone's old, you know, okay, you know, their time is coming. But there's a whole lot of things in life that are just out of the blue. Where did that come from? Why? Why did she leave? Why did they do that? Why did they die? What happened here? And there's these unexpected moments that we think we've got it all figured out. We've got our plan. We've got to understand. And we have to be careful because we end up living in fear then. Because and we need to understand that we can trust God in our fear. There's a book. Oh, I meant to bring it up here. There's a book called Plan B. It's written by a guy named Pete Wilson. I really encourage you to read it if you're going through a hard time. Because basically, the subtitle, and if I had it, I would be able to quote it for you. But he says, basically, when our expectations don't meet with God's realities, or something to that effect. And this idea of, you know, we have this plan, and it doesn't go the way we expect it. What's Plan B? And it's all about faith and trusting God through that. And there's a couple of quotes here that I thought were really interesting. He wrote in there, he said, I've noticed that even those of us who have trusted our Heavenly Father with our eternities, which if you are a Christ follower, you recognize Jesus died on the cross for your sin and has rescued you from eternity in hell. That's forever. We trust God for that. But then he goes on and says, but we don't trust God with our tomorrows. And if God can handle your eternity forever, rescuing you from Satan, I think he can handle your tomorrow. I think he can. And so we live, we kind of have this era of fear. And when there's another quote from the book, he actually quotes a guy named Irwin McManus. And he said, our fears establish the limits of our life. He said, this is so true, isn't it? If you fear heights, you will tend to stay low. If you fear the outside, you will stay inside. If you fear people, you will stay alone. If you fear failure, you simply won't try. And then he says, when you're under stress, I've observed the limiting effect is heightened. And so we live with this fear of, like, what's going to happen next? And we can trust God for the unexpected. One, and this isn't even what we're talking about. One, because he knows. It's not unexpected to him. It is not. That thing that came out of nowhere, that thing that happened all of a sudden, wasn't all of a sudden to God. It didn't surprise him. We can trust him with the unexpected. And there's this passage in John chapter 11. It's a story of Lazarus. And we actually talked about Lazarus's sisters, Mary and Martha, a couple of weeks ago. And so, now a man named Lazarus was sick. Here's the story of what's going on. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus. Lord, the one you love is sick. So Jesus has a connection with this family. We've already seen he's been to their house. She put perfume on his feet. And says, Lord, the one you love is sick. Lazarus is sick. And then when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Okay? All right, so, situation. Lazarus is sick. It's not looking good. Let Jesus know Lazarus is sick. He's all about healing the sick and bringing them back and fixing it all and making them all good. Let him know, hey, it's not just average Joe guy. This is Lazarus. This is, you know, we're family here, Jesus. We're tight. Let him know. And Jesus, the response is, hey, don't worry about it. I got it under control. This is going to be so that God's glorified. Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Okay, it's all working good. All right, Jesus, come on, man. Come on. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, He stayed where he was for 2 more days. You're wrong, Jesus. Sorry, that's not how it works. We're Lazarus, Mary, Martha, we're tight. You need, come on, come back here. No, he stays where he was for 2 more days. And of course, Lazarus dies. Lazarus is now dead. This is unexpected. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. This isn't the way it's supposed to work out. And here's what happens. We're kind of picking up a few verses later in verse 32. It says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was, so Jesus is back in town, reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Come on, Mary. Why would you say something mean like that to Jesus? God, why? If you had been here, if you cared about me, this would never have happened. Where are you? What's going on? And there? Maybe not said those things, but felt those things? Because Mary's upset. Because Jesus could have fixed this. Could have made this right. Could have healed him. Been good. When Jesus saw her weeping and the one who came along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And the phrase here, this word of there's some question of what it means. Does it mean he was just sad? Or he might have even been just angry and frustrated. So it's something going on here where Jesus is not just like, oh, he's upset. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see. They replied. Jesus wept. Shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man, we saw him do that, couldn't he have kept this guy from dying? Come on, what is up with this God? Why isn't he coming through the way we expect? Jesus was once more deeply moved. And again, this seems to imply that he was beyond now, I'm sad, but almost getting angry and frustrated. The word indignant is used in some of the translations. So don't you guys get it? It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. And I love this part. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's bad odor, for he's been dead there 4 days. He's been dead for 4 days. He's gonna smell. This is going to be gross. Jesus, no. Can we just not do this? You already didn't come through when you're supposed to. Why don't we just be done with this? Can we? Please, just, I'm done. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you, believe, that if you believe, sorry, did I not tell you that if you believe, I thought it made more sense, you will see the glory of God. And I think Jesus is saying, and I don't think, he is saying the same thing to us. If we believe, we will see the glory of God. When we have it all figured out, when it's expected, when it's part of our plan, we go, yeah, we're pretty good, aren't we? I'm pretty awesome. Look how I worked this out. You see how I got that promotion? You see what I did here? You see how this is perfect? You see how my kids are exactly the way they're supposed to be? I am good. Woohoo, me! No, wait. It's less of me. And when it's less of me, when it becomes about God, we go, wow, God, I could never have done this on my own. And you would never have gotten the glory. And that's what's going on here. So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I love this. This is like, Jesus is real, people. Jesus is real. It's like, I don't know, we've gotten this idea that he's this, oh, you know, and he is holy. And don't get me wrong, we talked about that in the 3 series. But he's real. He's not just so removed. He says, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I knew that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. Like, I just think there's something very real about that. Like, God, I'm praying to you. Come on, we are nowhere close. I am God. You are my Father. I am the Son of God. I'm just saying this because these people around here don't believe. And when he had said this, he called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And I love this. I love the way Jesus said this too. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Because, see, here was an unexpected circumstance, and Mary and Martha are like, Jesus, if only you had shown up. If only you had worked this out. If only it had been part of my plan. And Jesus said, oh, it's part of my plan. And I'm going to do something even bigger now. I'm going to do something even greater. Because one thing, yeah, he got better. Was that his medicine? I don't know. Was it medicine or Jesus? Might have been. He got alive. Don't know about that medicine. And it wasn't like, oh, well, maybe he wasn't really dead. No, it was 4 days. I think we knew. And now, he's alive. And so we can trust God in the unexpected, in the fear, in the moments where we go, this isn't what I wanted, God. God, why? Why didn't you work this out? And your prime verse, you're going to look at another passage from the Old Testament about the unexpected and going, why, God, why did this happen? This is not what I planned, Joseph. That's the story. This is not what I expected. But God had the expected in his hands. The unexpected in his hands was expected to him. So we can trust God with the unknown and the unexpected of our fear. We can also trust God in the unrest of our calling. And see, God, there are times in our lives, often, more often probably than we would recognize, where God calls us to do something. God says, I want you to give to that person. I want you to step out and go to that place. I want you to leave this job. I want you to start this career. I want you to move to this location. And we get to this spot where we're like, I don't know, that's a little bit uncomfortable. God, I'm used to this. And I know this. And why would I leave this? Because I've been doing this for a long time and I get this. Or God, why would I give that up? Because if I give that, I don't know what's going to happen. If I give to that person, how are we gonna pay for the things that we need? And so we have this unrest in our souls. We're like, we know God is calling, and we're really quick to shut it down. We're really good going, I don't know, I don't get it. It's outside of what I'm used to. It's not what I want. It's not my thing. It's not my plan. And so we hold back and we say, no, I'm not going to do that. And I just want you to know that if God is calling you to do something, God will come through. Where God guides, God provides. You probably have heard that before. I've shared this before, that God does not call the qualified. He qualifies the called. God is in the business. If he says, I'm calling you to do it, I will work it out. We need to trust. Because we say, no, I've got my plan. I've got my plan. I've got it figured out. And God says, no, less of you, more of me. More Jesus, more God, less you. And here we have an example of this, and again, you're going to look at an Old Testament example of this in your prime groups this week. But in Peter's vision, in Acts chapter 10. So, just to give you a little context here, Cornelius is a non-Jewish person. And Peter and everyone that Jesus had reached during his lifetime in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four accounts of the Gospels, were for the most part Jewish people. Every Jewish person thought Jesus is here with a Jewish message for Jewish people like us, and that's the end of it. And it's good, because we're cool, we're happy with that as Jewish people. We've been waiting for the Messiah. The story of the Old Testament is pretty much God's working with the Jewish people. So it all makes sense. And so Cornelius is this guy, and basically God says, I want you to go to this house where Peter is, and send some people to talk to him, because he's going to share something with you. So, that's background. So the next day, as Cornelius' messengers were nearing the town, Peter went up on the flat roof to pray. It was about noon, and he was hungry. But while a meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw the sky open and something like a large sheet was let down by its four corners. In the sheet were all sorts of animals, reptiles, and birds. Then a voice said to him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. No, Lord, Peter declared. So a voice from heaven, God speaking, saying, Peter, I want you to do this. And Peter says, no, Lord. I have never eaten anything our Jewish laws have declared impure and unclean. Because the things in this sheet, the law said you don't eat these things. You don't eat pork. We call it kosher. That's what the word kosher means. It's things that are allowed within Jewish ceremonial law. And this sheet is coming down to this Jewish man who is a good Jewish guy. Peter is a solid Jewish person. And the voice from heaven is saying, Peter, I want you to eat these things. And Peter's like, no. That is not what I'm used to. That is outside of my understanding. I have never eaten anything our Jewish laws have declared impure and unclean. But the voice again said, spoke again and said, do not call something unclean if God has made it clean. Short version, if God's calling you to do something, you do it. The same vision was repeated 3 times. Then the sheet was suddenly pulled up to heaven. Peter was very perplexed. There was this unrest. What could this mean? What's going on? God is calling me to do this. This seems really outside of what is normal, what makes sense. This seems outside of what I understand. But God is calling me to do this. What does this mean? I don't get it. What is going on? Peter, there's some guys at the door. And so here's the deal. Just then the men sent by Cornelius find Simon's home, Simon Peter, that was his name. Standing outside the gate, they asked if a man named Simon Peter was standing there. Meanwhile, as Peter was puzzling over the vision, the Holy Spirit said to him, 3 men have come looking for you. Get up, go downstairs, and go with them without hesitation. Don't worry, for I have sent them. So Peter went down and said, I'm the man you are looking for. Why have you come? They said, we were sent by Cornelius, a Roman officer. Remember, they were ready for Roman oppression to be ended. He is a non-Jewish Roman officer. He is a devout and God-fearing man, well-respected by all the Jews. A holy angel instructed him to summon you to his house so that he can come and hear your message. So Peter invited the men to stay for the night. The next day, he went with them, accompanied by some of the brothers from Joppa. So Peter has this vision. God says, I want you to do this thing that seems unclean. It seems outside of the realm of what is normal for you. It seems uncertain. It seems unknown. And Peter's like, no. And God says, no, do it. Trust me. I've got this. And at the very moment, Peter could have been like, no, I'm done. And I want you to know something. And now God's plan is bigger. Get this. But if Peter had said no, you and I would go to hell. Now that's an extreme. It's missing, you know, that God is sovereign and God is in control. But Peter going to Cornelius was the beginning of the message of Jesus going to the non-Jewish people, to the Gentiles. And then it went crazy from there. Basically, the entire New Testament, the letters of Paul, are written to churches that are not Jewish churches. So Peter in this moment began, because God said, I want you to do something that's outside of what you want. It's outside of what you understand. Do it. And that message now spreads. And here we are today, and again, you might be Jewish, but for the majority of us non-Jewish people who have the message of Jesus, because Peter obeyed God's calling, even though it didn't make sense. And I wonder how many times God is calling us to do something. We're like, seems uncertain. I don't get it, God. Meanwhile, there's people waiting to knock at the door, but we're like, nah, forget it. I'm not answering the door. I'm done. And we miss out on an incredible opportunity that God has put in us. So I want you to get it, that we can trust God in the unrest, in our calling. If God is calling you to do something, do it. He will work it out. I promise you. He promises you. In your prime groups this week, you'll look at an Old Testament example of the same kind of thing, of an unrest, of something God is calling them to do. Big step, and they took it. So, God can be trusted in the unexpected, in the unrest. And finally, we can trust God in the unbearable, in our troubles. We can trust God. We can trust God when it is not what we want. When our heart is broken, when it hurts, when there's pain, when there's loss, in those moments still, God is still in control. God is still with us, and we can trust God in those moments as well. And there's this passage, and again, John's answer. John is in a tough circumstance. John's in a hard spot, and he's hoping that Jesus will come back and be like, yep, rescued, released from prison, chains fell off, you're out. But the answer was, just trust me, I'm faithful, you're not getting out. And sometimes that's the story. But the story isn't about us. It's less of me, and it's about Him. And there's this passage in 2 Corinthians where Paul wrote most of the New Testament. Paul shared the message as a Jewish person that God sent to the Gentiles, to the non-Jewish people, to these churches. And one of the churches he planted was in Corinth, and he wrote two letters, and then the second letter he wrote, he's basically being open with them. He's Paul, the Apostle Paul. Big deal here. Jesus appeared to him on a road with a blinding light. Like, it's not just like, yeah, that was some guy, I don't know. Person number 7. But this is Paul. And he said that he's in a moment of transparency. He's sharing with this church in Corinth. He says, look, therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, in order to stay focused on less of me, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Now, people have guessed and studied and wondered and kind of think, like, there's really no way to know what that meant. It could have been something physical. It could have been some sort of an addiction. It could have been some sort of an actual demon, like, prodding and poking him. We don't know what it was, but the point is that it was bad. He didn't like it. And so this Paul is, and it was messenger of Satan, so be clear here. It's not, it was a good thing that was bothering me. This is clearly wrong, okay? I hope we can all agree that messengers of Satan are not good, okay? So Paul was just being clear. This is not a good thing. It was bothering me. It was tormenting me. And so what does he do? He tries to fix it. No, he does the right thing. 3 times, I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Okay, messenger of Satan, bad. He goes to God. He prays 3 separate times. Please, Lord, remove this bad thing from my life. So far, we're tracking with the story. We don't usually do that. We usually try to fix it ourselves, and maybe the messenger of Satan isn't as bad as we think it is, and we make it to be bad. But no, this is clearly bad thing, went to God in prayer. So far, so good. But he said to me, no. My grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. He says, no, I'm not going to remove this because I am going to show up in this situation, in this hard time. There isn't even going to be a good answer. There isn't going to be a resolution. You're still going to be in prison, but in prison, I'm going to be with you and you're going to go, wow, yes, God is amazing. I am going to be with you. My grace is sufficient for you. So whatever hard time we're going through, God says, my grace is sufficient for you. I am enough. And I will show up. But if you sometimes, we kind of like, we want to fix it, we want to deal with it, and we miss God showing up because we've got it all figured out. And so in these troubles, in this thorn of in his flesh, this messenger of Satan, Paul says, God, please remove it. And God says, no, because when you are weak, then I am strong. My power is made perfect in your weakness. When we are at our bottom and we have nowhere to go, that's when God lifts us up. When we are at our top and our peak and we're saying, yeah, look what we've done. Look what we've accomplished. God doesn't get the glory and we miss God. And going, well, God, where were you then? Oh, it was all about you before. What, not now? But when we find a spot where we say, no, it's less of me, it's more of Him. I'm going to trust His plan. I'm going to trust what He's doing. And that's what Paul says. And this is crazy. Paul says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses. He's not like twisted. He's not a person that likes pain. What's the word? Sadist, masochist, whatever. He's not anything like that. He just says, I'm going to boast about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, not because I'm crazy, but for Christ's sake, so that God gets the glory, I delight in weaknesses, I delight in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And so we can trust God, even if the answer isn't a happy ending, because His grace is sufficient for us. When we are weak, then He is strong. When we are less, He becomes more. When we are nothing, He becomes everything. When we are less and less and less, He becomes greater and greater and greater. And that is what John the Baptist was dealing with in prison, saying, okay, are you the one? Oh, you are? Then your grace is sufficient for me. Then I am okay with my circumstances because I can trust your plan. And so instead of whining like Luke, we can't see without the blast shield down, we need to remember that we can trust God. And I just totally lost my computer, so my tablet. What's the next slide there? There we go. We can trust God with the unknowns, in the unexpected of our fear, in the unrest of our calling, in the unbearable in our troubles. We can trust that He will come through. Less of me means more trusting God's plan. He is always faithful. Faithful shirts. You're wearing them because He is faithful. Would you pray with me? God, I thank You so much that this isn't about us. This story isn't about John the Baptist. This isn't about Paul or Lazarus or Mary and Martha. All of these are about You and Your glory and how You are perfect and wonderful and You love us deeply. And God, I pray that we would be able to walk by faith. That we would live by faith and not by sight. That we would push aside our understanding and our own ways of figuring it out and just trust You. And when we do that, watch You come through in great ways. Come through when there's those moments of the unexpected coming and just stepping back and knowing You had that in Your hand. And those moments when You're calling us to do something, that we just step into that and trust that You'll work out the details. In those moments of hurt, of trouble, the unbearable, knowing that even in that, Your grace is sufficient. Your power is made strong in our weakness. God, we know it, we've heard it, we've learned it now. Bring it from the top, from our heads, into our hearts, and ultimately to our hands and feet. May we live that, and we pray that in Your name, because Your name is powerful. Your name is the name that can make the changes that we need to, so that we can step back and be less of us and trust in You more. Amen.